Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, to the Winners Coming Game of Thrones podcast. I'm your host, Razor, and I'm here with Corey Smith and Dan Selke, and we're here to talk about all things Game of Thrones, even though we don't really have a Game of Thrones to talk about. It's good, it's done, it's over, it's gone. But we do have some interesting things coming down the pipeline. But first, Dan, you just got back from Nashville, Tennessee, where you were on panels at Con of Thrones, the premier Game of Thrones fan convention. Why don't you tell us about your experience there?
Well, David, my experience was very positive, and it had the following themes. it was great. It was also very nourishing, kind of. Like, look, there was a lot of backlash of the season. We all know that, the final season of Game of Thrones, season 8, we're talking about for viewers. And it was just, it was really nice to go to a place where everybody, even if they had misgivings, they were all here to celebrate the fandom. They all clearly loved it. You know, they were all here because they love this stuff. And I loved the cosplay. I loved the genuine interest in everything being said and talked about. And people listening to me when I talk, which is always a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a really great kind of revitalizing fan experience where I soaked up lots of good vibes, met some really fun people, attended a lot of cool panels, you know, saw the Game of Thrones stars in person, which was always fun. I took in panels with Nikolai Coster-Waldau, Jerome Flynn, all of them together. That was a good time. We talked on panels. I had a great time. It was hot as balls in Nashville. Holy shit, you guys.
Yeah, my cousin was there. He's always complaining about the heat.
Yeah, but our hotel was like literally like half a block from the convention center. So we just had to stay minimal time in the outdoors. But inside it was beautiful and nice and cool. And the people were lovely. And the costumes were great. The panels were scintillating, fascinating. And I really enjoyed my time. I really did. It was fun.
I've heard that most people on Twitter, on social media, are talking about it was generally a positive experience for everybody, kind of like a recharging of the Game of Thrones batteries. Like, you get
it
through.
Really was it totally yeah. Was like I felt rejuvenated, and it's part of the reason why I was a little perplexed when San Diego Comic-Con happened a week later, and there was that whole hubbub about them not asking fan questions at the panel.
Yeah.
The Game of Thrones panel. And part of me was like, I wonder if they just underestimated the audience, because fans asked all kinds of questions here of the cast members, and everything was totally cool and fine and chill. So, I mean, perhaps they were different kinds of fans. I don't know. But here it was nothing but good vibes. By the way, and that doesn't mean that we didn't discuss, you know, all our misgivings. It was just done in that, like, great, respectful, in-person way that you forget exists sometimes when you're just reading about stuff on Reddit and Twitter, and it's all the vitriol and hate. It was so nice to go to a place where you just, you know, because once you're in person and you're like talking to the people face to face, you can't pull that shit.
You can't be anonymous.
Like, it's indecorous and horrible. So you have to like be civil, and then you just talk, and then you'll shake it all out, and then you realize you all kind of have to feel the same way. And it was just, it was definitely a nice recharge of the batteries. I would put it that way.
Yeah, you know, comparing the two conventions, like, obviously San Diego Comic-Con is not Game of Thrones-centric. It's basically Game of Thrones gets to attend there.
Yes.
But, you know, watching the Winner is Coming Twitter feed during the Hall H panel, and people were just raging against the actors. Like, they were mad at Conleth Hill. They were like, does he know he talks shit about Season 8? Now he's praising it? And
No. Now, he never talked shit about his name.
I know.
He gave some candid opinions that people just jumped on and just twisted to their own ends. But yeah, Twitter is a steaming cesspool, and I want more followers.
I even heard people say this in regards to Waldell's comments about he didn't understand the backlash, and it was silly. He called it silly, right? They were like, so this is basically NCW's gaslighting.
No, not at all. Okay, also, that silly comment. So, this was interesting, because this is one of those times where you struggle with a headline to see, like, how truthful can I be while still being, like, eye-grabbing? So, a lot of the headlines boiled it down to, Nikolai Coster-Waldau calls Game of Thrones criticism kind of silly, which that includes my headline. That's the one I wrote. The full context, as it often is more complicated, that he was specifically referring to people who were lambasting David Benioff and Dan Weiss for not caring about the show or being lazy about it, saying that is kind of silly, given that he, worked in close proximity for the past
Correct.
10 years and knows from a primary source that they care more about it than anybody, which of course makes perfect sense. And that, we all heard about how hard it was to make season 8 and how hard they all worked instead of around the clock and yada, yada, yada. It makes zero sense to call people out for being lazy. So he was technically saying that criticism is kind of silly. And then, in the way that headlines work, it just kind of gets transformed into Nikolai Coster-Waldau says that criticism is kind of silly, which isn't really right. I also saw the same thing with Conleth Hill's comments today about, like, Conleth Hill confirms that Varys was poisoning Daenerys. Like, when you
I
watch
saw
the
that.
panel, like, no, that's not really what he said, but how these things work. They just take on a life of their own. Same thing with, I was talking to Mia Johnson today from Culturist, who was at San Diego Comic-Con, and there was a big thing going around about, like, Nikolai Coster-Waldau booed when defends Jaime Lannister. She was like, yeah, I was literally in the room. That is not what happened.
I was going to ask about that. I didn't hear where that he was getting booed. I don't know where that came
it's
from.
it's 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 I mean, we're in it. It's the blogging culture, and the way you want to be truthful, but you also want to get people to read. So it's this tightrope line you walk. And unfortunately, I mean, and look, I'm not going to say we haven't been guilty of this. You take a story that, and you boil it down to a headline that is, like, technically spiritually accurate, sort of in the big broad sense, but it leaves out some specificity or context. You kind of need to understand what's really being said. And of course, people, oftentimes they're not going to read the fine print. They're just going to run with that. So, and then it just, it becomes viral, as the kids say, and it happens. It's all fascinating. It's all wonderful. But that is so totally a thing that happens. It's a thing that happens here. And not just Game of Thrones. That happens with all kinds of stuff in the news today. But that's
Oh, of
probably
course.
on the purview of this podcast, I guess.
Basically, I mean, yeah. I
Nothing
wanted to
is
ask.
beyond the purview of this
Do you want to
podcast, Dave.
discuss Mueller then? Because I'm sure the headlines about the Mueller reports were, like,
We
all over the
talk
place today.
about KFC Cheeto chicken sandwiches on this podcast, okay?
We don't shy away from
This is
anything.
a podcast for the people,
Okay,
okay?
in that case, it was a foolish thing to interrogate Robert Mueller like that in front of the TV. No, I'm kidding. No, we're not going to go there.
I gotta ask you. I saw one of the coolest cosplays I saw from Con of Thrones was a guy walking around in an elephant costume. And I think he had Smith. Did you see this? It was on Twitter. It was a guy walking around in an elephant costume, and I think he had a Cersei doll or something. I forget what he had in his
Yeah,
hands.
I don't remember the prop.
It was a woman, and she called herself the pachyderm that was promised. We interviewed her. She was a good one. And yeah, she was the elephant that Cersei didn't get. And she also was there with a little girl, I think with her daughter, who was like 6 years old in Lyanna Mormont garb, and it was the
I
cutest
saw
thing in
that.
the fucking world.
So I've seen, like, last year you and Smith were there in Dallas, and I saw, like, the guy who dressed up as the wall, or I'm assuming it was the guy who was the
That's pretty
wall.
good, yeah.
So what was your favorite cosplay that you saw there this year?
Probably the Lyanna Mormont one, honestly. It was a 6-year-old in Lyanna Mormont garb. And I got her whole story. Like, she loves Lyanna Mormont. She had a Lyanna Mormont themed birthday party the week before. And her mom, who was the elephant, I think, like, lets her watch parts of this, not all of it, obviously, but she did see the Lyanna Mormont death scene. She cried for like a week.
Oh
It
my
was cute.
God.
It was
Why
so
would
cute.
you let your kid watch that?
I don't know. I didn't press too hard, Corey. It would be inappropriate. But yeah, she was great. There was one woman who walked around. She did a killer, like, season 2 Cersei look, and she had like a Siberian husky with her the whole time named Ghost. Beautiful fucking dog, who was
Nice.
like the star of the show by itself. And she walked around with her all day. That was great. The one who won was, I think, somebody who made the one person who won the cosplay contest was a Sansa who made her season 8 kind of armor plated look, imported all these individual scales from Europe and made it by hand. It was freaking remarkable. That was amazing. I talked to Elisa Aaron, who talked about how she imported all the silks that she used on the show, and talked to Michelle Clapp about how to get the
Elisa Aaron, huh?
Yeah, she was dead on. There was one Jaime Lannister who had the Infinity Gauntlet for his golden hand. That was cute.
I love the crossover cosplays. I love those.
There was tons of great stuff. We have a video coming in the near future. I talked to a bunch of cosplayers about just their costumes, who they were, why they chose it. Yeah, there was no end of really cool stuff.
Awesome. So what were the panels that you were a guest on?
I was on three panels. I was on How Game of Thrones Changed TV Forever. I was the moderator on that one, which, by the way, that just means that I walked in and just started to talk a lot. It was not planned, really. I was on the spinoff panel, all about Blood Moon. That was fun. Nice. And I was on a Cersei Lannister Journey's End. They had Journey's End panels, pretty much all the characters, Arya, Jon, because it's the last season. Daenerys, Theon, all those people. I went to the Theon one. I wasn't on that one. I was on the Cersei one, and I had a blast. That was a giant hour of standing the hell out of Cersei.
Was the Theon one, everybody just kind of sitting around holding hands, talking about how great Theon was in the end?
I mean, more or less, I didn't go to all the Journey's End panels, but the two I went to, which was Cersei and Theon, they were very just complimentary and standing, because why not? You go to celebrate them as characters and what they've done.
Right,
impression, that was pretty fun. It's up on YouTube now. A lot of these panels, by the way, listeners, are up on the Winners Coming YouTube page. I think we've uploaded all the ones we shot. I'm not sure. There might be a couple left. But there's a whole bevy of them to check out. And I recommend all of them, especially the ones that have me on them.
That's on the YouTube.com.
That's on the YouTube.com. there's probably a YouTube app or something like that. Winter is Coming, Wick. Just search for it.
There you go.
Yeah, we uploaded a mess of panels. Many of them with really good audio, and some of them featuring me.
Awesome. So, okay, Smith, you were there last year, and you talked about some of your favorite panels. You knew what Dan was on. Which one did you find more interesting out of the ones Dan went to?
I think the one about how Game of Thrones changed TV forever.
Did you watch that?
Yeah, of course. I watch everything you do, Dan. Gosh, I mean...
Seriously? Oh, that's right.
I watched that one and a little bit of the other ones, but I don't watch Wick live, I'll be honest.
Who has time for that garbage?
I mean, I am at work.
I'm kidding. I am at work,
so occasionally I do have to, work at the day job. And I think that's just an interesting topic, and I think regardless of how season 8 ended, it did change TV forever. I mean, look at all these shows they're coming out now that are, what's that show Jason Momoa's got for Apple TV?
I don't even know the name of that one, but yeah.
It's one word, here or now or then or something like that.
Yeah, so he's got that show. I mean, it's got a larger budget for its first season than...
Wait. You mean Totally
C.
Fat?
Called C.
Yes, there it is, C. Larger budget than Game of Thrones used to have for some of its later seasons. And it's kind of crazy that, it's on Apple TV. It's not even on broadcast TV. It's on a streaming network. So, I mean, yeah, Game of Thrones did change TV no matter what.
$15 million an episode.
Right, which is insane for a show.
How to get Apple TV.
Exactly. It's not even HBO. I mean, you're not talking this is a major network. It's literally Apple TV. I thought that was just that little thing that I plugged into the side of my TV so I could listen to iTunes or whatever,
It's and so fascinating.
So, and it's not the only one. The Mandalorian for Disney Plus has a budget in that range, and so it's
10
just
to 15.
Right. So it's everything. Yeah, I mean, so Game of Thrones completely changed the landscape. You can't come out with, you know, some show that looks half-assed anymore if you want people to tune in. I mean, now they literally raised the bar to the point where this is what you have to spend just out of the gate so that people will even take you seriously. So
I mean, and hopefully have good writing and themes too. Although we discussed this on the panel, do you think that the Game of Thrones effect, where it's people are spending all this lavish money on these kind of big splashy epics, is like the new normal, or is this going to be a thing that flares hot and heavy for a while until not enough of these things succeed? And they're going to be like,
exactly,
okay,
what it depends on. Right there.
I think that's probably what we'll end up. I think we're seeing a lot of it right now, and not there's just odds are not all of it's going to be good.
Ooh. If like you know, two or three of these catch on, I will count myself lucky.
Right, exactly. And so,
well, okay, hold on. Well, check this out. So you've got The Witcher, right, from Netflix. That's coming out later on.
That is like the nearish future that seems to be getting a bunch of buzz, which is good.
It's got a bunch of buzz, and it's Netflix's basically it's their answer to Game of Thrones, even though it dropped in one day.
It is a Netflix Game of Thrones.
And then you've got Showtime's working on the Kingkiller Chronicle at some point. And you've got Amazon with The Lord of the Rings.
And Wheel of Time. And so, Dark Tower.
There you go. All these genre shows coming out now are all probably thanks to Game of Thrones. And like Corey Smith said, I think this all it takes is for one of these big boys to flare out. Like, God, I hope this doesn't happen because I really have a lot riding with The Lord of the Rings. I hope it works out. But if it goes bust in season one, you're going to start seeing a lot of people scale back. Like,
I think it's the way it should be. I mean, honestly, The Lord of the Rings one was one of the ones that I think probably is in the most danger. I mean,
that one has the most pressure on it.
Yeah.
That one has by far the most pressure. Like, if that one goes, that's on, like, you know, that's a headline on CNN, you know, if Lord of the Rings show gets canceled by Amazon. Whereas, like, for example, Momoa's show, if that gets canceled, nobody, you know what I mean? It just doesn't have the brand.
Sure. Nobody will even know if that show gets canceled.
Right. And I mean, I don't mean to denigrate Momoa because I love that guy and I'm slightly afraid of him. But, you know, yeah, the Lord of the Rings one is the one where if that one doesn't succeed, then I think that one can have a bigger effect on the overall industry than some of the other ones if they, you know, necessarily aren't as
good. Yeah, probably.
So.
Yeah, and it's
Lord of the Rings. If Lord of the Rings fails, that's somebody high up. That's a VP or an exec getting fired. You're gonna hear that. Jeff Bezos comes down and fires somebody personally for that one.
I mean, honestly, I mean, and that one is giving off warning signs to me, like red flags to me. Like, you know, they didn't know if it was gonna be Aragorn, and then they decided, okay, we'll do the Second Age. I mean, that's not confirmed. That's me wildly speculating, but it seemed like that. Right. They, like, brought in people kind of late in the game, like Brian Cogman, while they were already kind of getting up to speed. You know, according to the terms of the deal, they, like, had to make somebody, like, before X number of years passed, or the deal was kaput. So, like, all of these things, like, make me nervous about that one in particular. I think they should have doubled down on Wheel of Time, honestly. That would have been a better bet.
Well, and you have both shows have huge built-in fan bases, and
yes,
Lord of the Rings is probably larger than Wheel of Time, although I've not dipped into Wheel of Time that much. I'm about to start pretty soon, but Lord of the Rings, because of the movies, because of the fact that Tolkien's basically the grandfather of all fantasy genres, that's basically has the biggest setup for failure if it does, and then the fan base is not going to forgive. Like, Cogman, you know, they're already afraid of Cogman coming on and being lore master for the show. Like, that's people are worried about that already.
Really? I mean, I thought he was doing a pretty good job in Game of Thrones.
I did too, but you know how people are. Anyway, I'm glad that you got to go to Con of Thrones and
it was a good time, man.
That's awesome. I wish I could have gone. I think that's got to be the best environment for a Game of Thrones fan.
Totally.
You know, because the people that are going to go there are only the people that just mega love the show, you know?
Yeah.
So
you know who I would like to see at Con of Thrones? I would like to see Corey Fone on a panel on Con of Thrones.
He would be yeah, entertaining.
Corey Fone just joined us, by the way, everybody. So say hello to Corey Fone while you're listening at home. What's going on, Fone?
Not much. Sorry I'm late. Just got a lot going on. And just glad I'm able to get on with you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. So let's move on from Con of Thrones and let's talk about a little bit of news that hit this afternoon, late this afternoon. Apparently, Casey Bloys announced, or didn't really announce, I guess he kind of mentioned it, Smith, that Blood Moon, the Game of Thrones prequel, has finished filming the pilot episode. Now we're just waiting on HBO to, I don't know, I guess HBO is going to decide if they're going to green light this series. Dan, I got to ask you, do you think the series is already greenlit and we're just waiting for an official announcement?
No, I don't think they would unless they – I don't think they would bother filming the pilot unless they wanted to go through a pilot process. I'm more mad that I'm hearing about this just now. Why is it not on the site yet? Where's the link? Send me a link.
I just heard about it when I got on to get on the podcast. I saw Corey Smith, it's your fault.
Hey, listen, I have other obligations other than WIC 24/7.
No, good job.
I hate to break it to you. But yeah, no, he was at the TCA, the Television Correspondents Association, whatever.
Letters, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. He was talking, and yeah, he said that it just wrapped, and that everything he's seen so far looks really great. He's really proud of the cast, and they, you know, are gonna decide about whether or not to book it to a full series. So, it seems pretty quick, but I guess, you know, they were only filming one episode. So I guess, you know, maybe not that quick, but we did, you know, they were filming off of the coast of Italy a lot. And then basically the rest of it was in Northern Ireland. So they basically only filmed in two different spots from what we can tell, right?
Northern Ireland, Belfast for the Titanic Studios and then in Italy, correct, Dan?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm.
Dan is furiously typing up the report right now for the site.
That's the kind of professionalism you guys have missed since we haven't been on air with Take the Black Podcast.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting. I don't know why they didn't go to full series. The only thing I can think is that the concept of what they're doing is so far different from the original show that at least somebody in the room is kind of like, hold on, we need to like see if this works first.
Well, we can quickly mention things we've seen from filming, right? We've seen from Titanic Studios the big weirwood tree, so we know it's got a strong north of Westeros storyline, correct? And then we've got the one in Italy looked like they they were filming scenes for Castle Rock there, and we saw that picture of that boat out in the water that had a weird sigil on it. Some people said it was House Stark. I don't think it looked like House Stark. You and I did the WIC forensics on it. We didn't think it looked like a dire wolf, but it could have been. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there, and I hope it works
and
out.
And Naomi Watts' costume was pretty
wild. Yeah.
It was like, very, like, Athenian, like very yes. Greek-looking, and her hair was real big, and it just – it seemed really out of place to me, considering it's 5,000 years before. But, I mean, clearly we haven't connected all the dots yet, right? So, but yeah, I mean, we've got some pretty clear shots of a lot of stuff, which is kind of surprising. It was like, it's like whoever was doing security on Game of Thrones is not doing security on Blood Moon. And, cause we had that, you know, that picture of Naomi Watts walking through the streets in full costume. So, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just weird. That they didn't greenlight it.
Let's ask our resident Cash fan, Corey Fone. Fone, are you interested in the Blood Moon right now? Do you even care about it right now?
Blood Moon, is that like a Twilight sequel?
Yes.
Totally. Exactly.
Nailed it.
No, I'm a little more than the casual fan, but I also like, yes, the cast looks great. I'm sure that I will check it out when it comes out, but we're so far away from it. You know, I can tell you that one thing that they may be doing, by even though I kind of agree that they're almost assuredly going to greenlight it, because
right,
you don't cast the people that they cast, those names. I mean, to me, it would be strange if HBO, it would have to be a disaster for them not to to greenlight it. But I think that they're kind of letting, you know, the dust settle after the Game of Thrones. I'm not even talking about the quality. I'm not talking about fan blowback or anything. Just like, you know, Game of Thrones was a big adventure. It was a big dedication for a lot of fans. And let's take a break. Let's let fans, you know, take a nap before we start doing more in that universe, because HBO has a lot of things out there. They have a lot of stuff in the queue. So there's no need to rush. I don't think necessarily Blood Moon. You can wait a year or so and then have it come out to really, really build that hype back up for it. Because, I mean, like I said, HBO's got a lot going on. And, you know, the world's, I mean, even look at Marvel. Marvel's taking a break after after Spider-Man and Endgame. You know, there's a big gap. Like, sometimes you just kind of let people bask in the finale. The finale.
Yeah, Star Wars is taking a break until 2022, I believe. So, yeah, people are taking time off from the big genre shows that are coming up.
Well, they're going to, I think I read that they're giving, never mind, I'm not going to make a joke. I don't want to be a joke.
I was just going to say, though, I mean, it does, if they did, the only thing, yeah, I think they just are taking their time. And because even if they greenlit it, right, they got the pilot in the can. Even if they greenlit, it's going to be another year before they can complete a season, right? Mm-hmm. Which would then, which would
6 months.
Well, I mean, they'd have to, they're going to have to write the rest of the season. I'm sure they have outlines, but they're going to have to write scripts and then film. And I mean, the earliest if they rushed shit would be next spring. So, and then again, then you'd be, you know, only a year apart. I think they're going to go more for like a 2 year break.
I've seen a lot of people on Twitter basically guess 2021. Like, you know, like Bone mentioned, HBO's got a pretty large lineup going right now, and I think they stacked the deck on purpose. Once
again, yeah, because when does Westworld 3 come out?
Next year.
Yeah, so I mean, they're gonna let Westworld have its, you know, what I mean, be its big spring show, and then, you know, maybe we get Blood Moon in the fall.
Well, see, I don't think HBO necessarily follows that. That same guideline anymore. Look at what they've got lined up for the rest of this year. We're already heading into the back half of this year, and we've got Watchmen and His Dark Materials that are coming up, and those are going to be two pretty big shows for HBO. And
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
About this, since we're talking kind of non Game of Thronesy things at the moment.
Because
mm-hmm. All three of you guys, I'm assuming, are the kind of people that have read these fantasy, like His Dark Materials, maybe, and
I have
Lord of the Rings. I mean, I've even read Lord of the Rings, yeah. But, you know, do you think that the fantasy genre, the success of Game of Thrones was, is it recreatable, or was it more of a one-off in the sense that it was just right place, right time kind of entertainment?
Because we should mention that.
Literally talking about this.
Okay. I'm so sorry.
It's not as far. It's just like life gives you coincidences,
right?
What a quinky dink.
Probably not. I mean, no. We were saying that there are so many fantasy shows that are big and huge being readied. Most of them are probably going to fail.
Yeah.
Like I think I'm sure a couple will find their audiences and last until the end. But no, there's just no way most or all or even some of them can like get the Game of Thrones success that you know studios are hoping for. There's just no way. However, I mean, if a few are really good, I think it will be worth it. Like His Dark Materials, done by HBO, that could be excellent. Like those are really good books. HBO is, you know, committed to quality, more or less. So I'm looking forward to that one in particular. And The Witcher looks pretty good, too. But no, I'm expecting like a 4 to 5 year blast of these big fantasy properties. And it's going to be high times for people like me who like this kind of stuff. But no, like this boom will end when the studios realize that, oh, not all of this stuff can be as big as Game of Thrones was, and then we'll move on to the next thing, which might be a return to the Friends-like multi-camera sitcom. That's what I'm predicting.
That's interesting.
I think the success of Friends on Netflix has shown that like there is a market for that. But I also think that Friends kind of
there's a nostalgia factor there too.
Well, not just that, like it's funny you say Friends because Friends was kind of the last show before people in mass started getting satellite TV and all these different options. And so like you've seen shows since Friends and Seinfeld, that era, like get less and less, like comparing the biggest comedy of my like high school, early college career was Big Bang Theory. Even though I wasn't a fan, it was huge. And the ratings on it were laughably lower than Friends or Seinfeld or MASH or whatever. Right. So like Friends was kind of, The Office. Yeah. Even the good ones didn't get, The Office and Parks and Rec and Community were always on the chopping block, So I think that Friends is interesting to compare to Game of Thrones in that regard, because it might have been the last destination network comedy that like everybody watched, right, and it lasted into the age of satellite TV like Dish and everything, right, else, and DVR and TiVo and everything. And like people have been talking about Game of Thrones being the last, maybe the last ever destination television show. So and the hold that Friends still has on a generation that totally missed it, I think Game of Thrones could potentially be that way as well. I really think that especially those first like four seasons, were so good that you can really just, I think that's going to stand the test of time. So I'm interested in that in the future too.
And that's a really good point. That's a really good point, because now that Game of Thrones is over, look at all the streaming services that are starting or have just started in the past year or so. You've got even HBO that now belongs to AT&T. They're going with the stupid name of HBO Max. And ironically, Friends is going to HBO Max, by the way, from Netflix. And then you've got Disney Plus. You've got Netflix. You've got Amazon Prime.
You got CISO. Oh, wait, that's already died. Yahoo Screen. Oh, wait, that's gone.
Apple TV. So, the age of the streaming giant, we're definitely in that age now. It just depends on... Dan and I have talked about this before.
Like, that's a bubble too, though. Like, I'm not sure all those streaming services will last. I mean, some of them, like Disney Plus, like it's a too big to fail situation, I think. They'll just will themselves into ubiquity with their giant chest of money and content. But I mean, I don't think all of them are going to be able to be hits.
Well, Dan, think about this. DC Universe came out last year, and already HBO Max is undercutting it with their own WB DC comic content.
Right.
And it's like DC Universe was supposed to be the end-all, be-all place for, DC stuff, and now it's going to other places. And it's like, okay, so this doesn't really make sense. I'm not going to get DC Universe. I don't care if I like Titans or whatever the new show is coming out. I don't care. I'm just going to wait until it hits HBO Max, or whatever. So,
there you go.
They're all going to be, you and I have talked about this before. Eventually, there's going to be one or two enormous, massive world eater streaming giants. And they're going to duke it out. It'll probably be Disney.
Disney bought Hulu, didn't they? Like, it's only a matter of time
Disney
before.
Disney bought Hulu. Yeah, Disney.
They bought 33%, I think, percent of Hulu.
Well, they already owned 33% before that.
Oh, okay, so now they have a majority stake.
So, like, correct. That thing got borrowed time, maybe?
Well, yeah, because the other thing is, I think it's Comcast to own the remaining percentage, and they've already agreed to sell their remaining shares to Disney in 2 years. So, yeah, basically, eventually Hulu will get folded into Disney Plus, right? Because why would you have two competing streaming services?
So at what point does the government step in on Disney? I'm not joking.
I'm not joking. In this environment where there's a lot of the stuff going on, I don't know if the government does that kind of thing anymore.
Yeah. The last time that a major was at Microsoft, right? Was like, that was the last one I could think of that was a household name type, you know, basically trust busting or whatever. but that's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the mouse has, I saw a tweet where like 60% of the movies in the top, like 6 of the 10 movies in the top of the box office are Disney properties.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's, I mean, not, that's not okay.
I think we could really use another trust busting era. Like we haven't had one in a while. I don't think the people in charge now have any interest, but I mean, I don't know. Who knows what happens in 2020? We'll see.
Yeah. But back to Thone's point, I mean, is it Disney's fault that everybody else is making shitty movies?
I mean, it's not, but you know what I mean?
Like,
it doesn't mean that what Disney's doing isn't anti-competitive in the end and bad for the industry as a whole in the long run.
I don't know. And obviously smarter people than us will decide this, but, I mean, is it Disney's fault that, you know, Warner Brothers decides to make Suicide Squad?
You know what I mean? Like that was Disney's biggest competitor back in the day. It was supposed to be DC versus Marvel, and DC fucked up by going back and back and back and messing up with the movies and messing up with their canon, and the MCU pushed forward. And so
I mean, is that Disney's fault that their movies are great? Or is it, you know what I mean? Or is it the fact that everybody else is just like not very good at their jobs? I mean, I don't know. Where do you draw the line, I guess?
They wouldn't be punished for making good movies. They'd be punished for making all the movies.
All the movies.
Rather broken up. I mean, I do believe in antitrust law. I think it has a place in American society. We haven't used it for a while because there hasn't really been the will. But I'd be behind it.
I think eventually you'll get to the point where you've got probably, you know, everybody's having their own streaming service. I think eventually you get down to it's going to be probably Netflix, Disney, and Amazon. And everybody else will get gobbled up by someone else. But, I mean, if you have three different companies, how can you argue that one of them has a, you know what I mean?
I wish I knew more about how they solved this problem back when there was vertical integration in the old movie days, in like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. But we should probably look it up later and reconvene, because now I'm shooting in the dark.
We are in the weeds right now.
I told you nothing was above this podcast, okay?
That's true.
That was the most like intellectual conversation we've had on this podcast. So Hold on, stop.
We got to go to something else.
Did anybody see the Jay and Silent Bob reboot trailer? Snoochie Boochies. That's something. Yeah, it really did look really bad.
Yes, it did.
I gotta say, man, let's just do this really quick. We're still in the Beyond the Wall section of Pick the Black tonight. let's talk about our favorite trailers from San Diego Comic Con. Like, there were some great trailers, and there were some really, really bad. I think my favorite had to be Cats. Like, I cannot wait to see that.
Oh, yeah. Cheryl wrote a whole – on Winners.net wrote a whole thing, like, of all the trailers that came out, like, which ones were the best, which ones were the worst. Let's pull that up. Yes, Cats was probably my favorite, too.
How scary was that Cats? Like, I don't know who thought that was a good idea, but that was just awful. That was terrible. Dan, you are a big Cats fan. What did you think of Cats? You said you saw that six times?
When I was a kid, I was taken to Cats a bunch. I've seen I know Cats. I've seen it. I'm not a Cats fan. I'm not a meowster, whatever they call themselves.
Can I just say, because of that trailer, among other things, I found out that the cat Richter that Jason Derulo plays is named Rum Tum Tugger. Rum Tum Tugger, and that's when I knew that play was invented in a different timeline and was somehow transported over here, because the fact that it exists is, I feel like, a joke. Like you know how sometimes you see like, I mean, hell, this happened with, like, you know, Marvel. They release a trailer, and the CG is just not quite done yet, but you can kind of tell it doesn't look polished, right? That,
you mean Sonic?
Yeah, Sonic's a fine, Sonic's a good example. I would watch Sonic 10 times before I watch Cats, but the Cats trailer was not unfinished. That was definitely finished. They were someone different director, producers, like the studio, they all watched that and went, hell yeah, let's start the buzz for this Christmas release early in July.
Let's break the internet.
And they did. Like a cat pushes something off a table, they broke the internet.
I don't know if the Rum Tum Tugger, because you know, Cats, the songs are all based on poems by T.S. Eliot, I think, yeah. Or was it E.E. Cummings? One of them. T.S. Eliot, I think. I don't know if he did the Rum Tum Tugger one. Probably not.
I don't know. I had to read a handful of T.S. Eliot poems when I was in high school, and I really enjoyed them. So when I found out that Cats was based off his work, I was like, which ones? Because I don't feel like this matches up with what I read. But
oh, no. I just... The director of Cats, Tom Hooper, who has done some stuff,
is
also directing his Dark Materials, the TV show.
Kind of scared now. Kind of
worried.
Is
the polar bear's name, like, Cold Snow Hugger or something?
My favorite cat was McCavity when I was a kid. You can take that and use it how you will.
McCavity?
McCavity. He is the thief cat, as I recall. Also, if Jennifer Hudson is playing Grisabella, who is Judi Dench playing? Okay,
by the way, Dame Judi Dench looked the worst out of all of them. Besides, maybe Jennifer Hudson looked terrible in her song. Judi Dench looked terrible the entire trailer. And I love her, and that's terrible that she looks so bad. And then, of course, Sarah, everybody knows Sarah, has been our guest on our podcast, has some hilarious takes on James Gordon.
He's in it too, isn't he?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you both had James Corden and Rebel Wilson doing... like their
which are basically interchangeable at this point.
Yeah, their shtick that they do in all the movies, and I was like, that doesn't feel, because like I know that Cats, like I don't know much about Cats, both the animal or the play, but I really don't think Rebel Wilson shenaniganery was like something that would fit into it, but maybe I'm wrong.
You mean the whole hey, I'm fat, I'm gonna fall on things and hurt myself, laugh at me.
Yeah, like the worst of Chris Farley is like all that Farley, that is.
The Chris Farley shtick, yeah.
Yeah, the like late stage Farley.
I'd say Rebel Wilson would probably play, what the fuck was her name? The lazy one. I forget her name. And Ian McKellen would play Gus the theater cat. This is my Cat's knowledge being really useful on this podcast.
Is Ian McKellen in this movie?
Yeah and Idris Elba.
Oh my god, why?
Anyway, the actual answer to the trailer question is, His Dark Materials I liked. The Witcher, because I'm reading those books, I think it looked pretty interesting. It Chapter 2, something like that. I realized that folks who just... I've never seen Star Trek, but Picard is getting a lot of good buzz.
Picard looked really good.
Yeah, that trailer looked pretty damn amazing. That was the one I was most excited for trailer-wise. There's a lot of other news that came out, like the Blade reboot. The Black Widow movie.
Hold up. Don't lie. First of all, we have two opposing hot takes on this podcast. One hot take is I love the Maverick trailer. The other hot take.
Okay, hold on. Fuck, I forgot the Maverick trailer. The Maverick trailer was my favorite one. I literally almost shit my pants. I had to go take a break. Maverick was by far the most exciting trailer.
Corey Phone in 3, 2.
Top Gun sucks.
Who the fuck invited this guy?
Sorry, he's that I have eyes. Like it's such a bad movie, and it is like objectively bad. Like you can watch it through nostalgia lenses, like I watched The Goonies, which is objectively a bad movie, but enjoy it. But you can't sit there and say, "Look at how good Top Gun is," because it is not. And I honestly. Don't think I've ever been able to sit through a complete sitting of Top Gun. I've seen the movie, but it's only in in shifts. Like it's just so bad. It is, it's bad, guys.
Okay,
You fucking communist. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because like that movie is just pure propaganda. Anyway.
Yes, and it's awesome. And it's awesome. It is the most awesome thing in the world. You understand that movie was in my parents' divorce hearing, okay?
What do you mean?
This movie is interwoven in the fabric of my life, and I fucking love it.
You have to hear the story, Corey Smith. I bequeath. I let you know. I've given you time to tell the story.
Okay, well, please, I just, you know, hope my parents don't ever listen to this
podcast. No one listens to this podcast.
No one listens so anyway. So I, yeah. But when they, I mean, because when they got divorced around the time that Top Gun came out on VHS, which tells you it was a long time ago. And I guess one of the arguments my dad used that my mom was an unfit parent was that she let us watch Top Gun because of that shadow sex scene between Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis, right? Is that her name? So, yeah, so, and I'm pretty sure my dad was the one who rented the movie, but anyways.
Plot twist.
Plot twist, yeah. So, yeah, so this movie has always been one of my all-time favorite movies. I understand it's corny. I understand it's propaganda. But the movie's just fun. I love it. I love Tom Cruise. He's a little crazy in real life, but he makes pretty damn good movies. And I am psyched for the fucking Top Gun
sequel. All right, all right. Some things you get attached to when you're a child, and it's just irrational, and it just binds to your DNA.
Like Dan with cats.
Yeah,
Don't like cats. I realize it's not good. I've seen it on stage more than twice. But I was mostly a kid. I've never seen Top Gun. I've never seen Star Trek Next Generation. I have seen cats on stage more than twice.
All right, well, this is the real question I need you guys to answer. Top Gun or Iron Eagle?
Are you fucking kidding me? That's not even close. I literally just almost choked on my beer.
How is that going to be important to him?
Iron Eagle is a spinoff. It's like a, not a spinoff, but like a...
Ripoff?
Ripoff, yeah, there you go.
It's a ripoff. It's
a pastiche, if you will.
I knew that would get you started, Smith.
Like I'm not already started. But anyways, I did think the Picard trailer looked very, very good. And I definitely will. I didn't get, what's it called, CBS All Access, whatever.
All Access, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get that for Discovery, even though I heard it's good. But I definitely will be picking it up for Picard.
Cheryl today said she would get it for Picard. So yes. I'll pick up a few extra people with that.
Yeah, I'll definitely be picking it up for
Discovery's really good. Discovery's a really, really good show, and it's worth watching the two seasons that are already out to get caught up in there.
Yeah, I've heard it's good. It wasn't enough for me to get a whole nother freaking streaming service and login information and forgetting my fucking password and all that shit. But Picard, I'll go through all that because that trailer looked pretty good. It had a couple of returning people from Next Generation, the one girl from Voyager. So
7 of 9.
Yeah, 7 of 9. So I'm definitely intrigued. I think it looked very good to see Picard kind of after he's out of Starfleet. So yeah, I mean those were my favorite ones. I was definitely also excited about the Blade reboot. I think
Mahershala Ali for Blade is such a good choice. Thank Such you. A really good choice.
Yeah, and I think that'll be a lot of fun whenever that comes out. I mean, I think it's 2-3 years down the road, but...
It better be R-rated.
It better be R-rated.
I think it will be. I think if Marvel is trying... If Marvel, like, wants this crazy money train to continue, they got to diversify a little bit. They can't all be PG-13 romps. I think it would behoove them to put an R-rated cap on their feather.
Kevin Feige's already said that Deadpool's coming in as R-rated, and they might introduce him with the next Spider-Man movie, which would be 3 or 4 years down the line, but it will be Ryan Reynolds, and it will be R-rated. So,
I think you can have both. I don't understand why you have to. They can't be, you know, exist together. And
to kind of pivot into what Corey's saying and also give my answers since Smith's taking so long with his wholehearted defense of Top Gun.
Yeah, I'll bring it up, okay?
The two things I was most excited about, one was seeing that Marvel Disney, even though, you know, trust busting, even though all that, they really look like they're about to start taking some risks with spinoffs and stuff. And
The Eternals?
Not just that. I mean, making Love but yeah, Thunder. The Eternals looks great, but I'm talking about like Doctor Strange and Wanda's thing that's going to be kind of like a horror movie almost, apparently, like a psychological horror movie.
Oh yeah,
and you're going to have on their
Natalie
TV channel
Portman is Thor.
Yeah, you. I mean, it's like you have cosmic. They're spinning, and they're like taking these risks, and I really want them because, you know, I'm a big Star Wars nerd, and whenever Disney bought Star Wars, I was really excited at the prospect of the one-off movies. I was like, I don't really care about the trilogy because I know they're just going to do Skywalker crap, which is the opposite of what I wanted them to do. But I'm excited at the prospect of like, hey, we've got, you know, a decent budget here. Everybody just pitch scripts to us and like have writer director, you know, Spike Jonze pitch this, you know, he pitched Seven Samurai, but with, you know, with Jedi on one planet, there's no space travel. It's all just here, you know, and it's like, ah, oh, we picked Spike Jonze. Here's a budget, make a movie. See you in a year. And like, I was very excited that they would do that. You know, hey, let's poach one of those directors from A24 and give them $50 million and have them make a psychological, you know, movie in the Star Wars universe. But they haven't done that. Nope. And now to see Marvel is branching out into that, I'm hopeful that maybe they go, you know, Star Wars has a huge expanded universe that has so many stories you could pull off of. Let's have some fun with that. It's more about the prospect of the success I hope they have with the weird ones so that we can start getting more weird ones. And then the Rick and Morty trailer, which you guys neglected. We got,
well, obviously I knew you would like that.
Yeah. Taika Waititi is a cameo in it, which is amazing. And we got a great one liner from Morty, yelling at his dad. Anytime Morty yells at his parents is probably my favorite parts of the show. So it gave me one of those. I'm very excited for Rick and Morty. Excited. They finally got that deal done. 70 some odd episodes coming in the next few years. And the best part is when that's guaranteed, you know, the way that Roiland and Harmon work, it seems now that they know exactly how many episodes they have guaranteed, I'm assuming we're going to see the type of long reaching story arcs and stuff that we haven't really seen in American cartoons before. So
I think the reason it was neglected was because it wasn't a trailer, but a clip.
It's a clip. That's true. It's 100% a clip.
I will say, Cheryl did watch it, and she was not a fan. I love Rick and Morty. I do. I'm looking forward to it too. I love that show. There are people out there who don't like it because of just the kind of the douchey aura it gives off in some quarters. So I can understand that. But I'm also psyched about it and the 70 episodes.
I think it's the fandom that kind of repel some people, the whole Szechuan sauce thing. But I was impressed by HBO's offering.
Watchmen looked great.
Watchmen looked amazing. The fact that they're bringing in the characters from the original graphic novel and reaching back to like the in-universe stories, like the Minutemen stories where you had the Hangman and all those guys, like those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, you know, and then of course you had, you know, Dr. Manhattan at the very end, and for the longest time, you know, Dan, you and I covered this from the beginning, and it's like we didn't think that any of the original characters except for Ozymandias was going to be in this, and we've got all these old original characters either showing up in universe movies or in universe shows, or you're going to have like the actual characters themselves pop up, and like to show Dr. Manhattan on Mars and to have that song playing, they did a really good job. And of course, I was impressed by Westworld 3. Like, I'm excited to see what they do with that. Like, they've got a lot to prove to the fandom. If they want to be the next, you know, the next flagship series for HBO, they're going to have to make up for the convoluted story they did in season 2. Even though I enjoyed season 2, I can see why people didn't. And it looks like they're going to course correct in season 3. At least from the trailer, it looked like that.
Calling it course correction is not true. They are doing a full-on pivot away from...
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
Everything about last season that, like they... Even though last season was convoluted, if they are able to stick season 3's landing, we'll be able to look back at it and just kind of understand that they were pretty much ending a lot of those storylines. Like, they were like, a lot of these characters aren't going to work in where we want to take the show, and I feel like they had a hard time deciding how to get rid of them, maybe, which might explain some of the stuff.
Well, yeah, of course. Like, I was happy that we saw Ed Harris's character, the Man in Black. He was in there. Like, he's stuck in that room where he gets the fidelity test, and it's like all broken down, like Daedalus's room was whenever he was giving him the fidelity test. You know, and he looks up at the ceiling, and the blood drops on his forehead. So at some point, Bernard goes back to the actual Westworld Park, And
I'm assuming to get Peter Abernathy.
That's what I thought too. But make sure, you know, they have.
But this is for, I don't know, for Smith. I think Smith's actually, he's not even going to watch it. For me, this is their chance to keep me watching, because I really did not like season two except for the Akichitai episode, which I think might be the best episode of the whole damn series.
Beautiful.
I like the one with James Delos kind of.
Yeah, those scenes. Good. Yeah, I agree with those scenes where there were a lot of cool scenes. I just didn't like the season as a whole. I felt like they were lost. And if it turns out they were lost because, you know, the direction that they were taking the show and where they were, it was kind of like a George R. R. Martin moment where it's like, everyone's on different continents and I need them to be here now. And so, like, that's tough. So, whatever. But
they're repiloting for season three, which I think is definitely the right move.
Someone called it Westworld Ghost in the Shell, and I was like, yeah, that fits. So.
Okay. Let's talk about our last fun topic for the evening. Let's talk about Game of Thrones at the Emmys. And we don't have to keep it to Game of Thrones, but like the Emmy Awards, the nominations came out a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I guess now. And Game of Thrones is having its last hurrah. And I'm not sure that putting up some of those episode choices and some of the actors in the positions they did is going to win. Dan, thoughts?
Disagree. I was talking about this with Cheryl on Wit Club today. Look, this is easily the most contentious, controversial, least universally well-liked season of Game of Thrones, and it got more Emmy nominations than any season before, indeed any drama or any show before in 1 year. This is the record. 32 nominations. Most nominations for any show in 1 year ever. The Emmys have never and are not about how good a show is. That's true for the Oscars. That's true for any award show. It has never been about the quality. It is about the politics. It is about the marketing. It is about the momentum. It is about honoring a body of work. It is about who rises at what time. It is about perception. It is about the voters. The quality is like fifth on the list. Not to say the season wasn't great and had wonderful high points, but if your argument is that they're not going to vote for it because it wasn't as good as the past, I think that's like ninth on the list of considerations people make when voting for who wins an Emmy.
Yeah.
Well, I'm talking, and Smith, I'll let you jump in here in a second, but I'm talking like Kit Harington for lead actor. Don't get me wrong.
Maybe not him, fine.
Don't get me wrong. I love Kit Harington. I love that he did such a great job with Jon Snow, but he wasn't given the material in season 8, in my opinion.
Okay, fine. Like that one, they might not vote him in. But I could see them giving it to Emilia Clarke. I could see them. Do you realize in the Best Supporting Actress category, 4 out of the 6 nominees are Game of Thrones actresses?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, a big part of it is momentum. I think people want to honor everything the show's done for the industry. I mean, this is an industry event at the end of the day. It's not like it's a popularity contest. Well, actually it is.
It kind of is. Smith, you have some thoughts.
Not a fan. Liking is different than inside industry choices.
I was just going to say, to Dan's point, I mean, and sort of piggybacking on what you said with Kit Harington, I mean, Lena Headey being nominated for Best Supporting Actress, that's a legacy nomination there. Because
yeah, she had like 2 scenes.
Right. And one of the biggest problems with season 8 was that she wasn't a big part of it, right? That was a huge issue because she's an incredible actress. And I don't mean to say that she, you know, it doesn't deserve an Emmy nomination, but if you were going to nominate her for a season, it shouldn't be season 8. So yeah, I mean, to Dan's point, this is more about the popularity of the show, sort of recognition of the body of the work, and not necessarily this individual season, even though that's what they say it is. And also, I mean, like Alfie Allen being nominated.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
I mean, that guy should have been nominated a long time ago, because his stuff on the show is incredible. But he's not one of the main characters on the show, and he's not a Stark or a Lannister or Daenerys, and so he kind of always got overlooked. And yeah, I mean, I think that's more of a legacy nomination, even though he was pretty good in season 8. Again, I mean, I don't think anybody, if we're being honest, I don't think season 8 was anybody's best work on this show.
I don't know. Emilia,
I think it might have been Clark's
strong season.
Okay, yeah. Right. But I mean, but you see what I'm saying. I mean, it wasn't necessarily any of their best works, and maybe Clark's, it was Clark's, but.
Maisie,
you know,
Williams,
maybe Maisie, but I mean, most of them, it's like, yeah, their best work was in other seasons and multiple seasons.
I gotta say, Sophie Turner turned in a strong season too, man. I kind of think you're off on that.
I do think Sophie Turner would give the best acceptance speech, so that's a point in her favor. But not as
they're like, who will give the best acceptance speech? Let's let them win.
Pretty sure Sophie Turner would cry. I'm pretty sure Emilia Clarke would give a funny one too. So that's what if that's what I'm basing my choices on, that's why I pick.
But let's just say this: if Gwendolyn Christie wins for supporting, we're all crying. We're all gonna be boohooing.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought her up, because we should talk about that. I still am not really understanding why several of them nominated themselves.
Oh my god, that is so funny, because I'm reading this Casey Bloys interview where he talks about the stuff. And he addresses that very thing. Let's see what he says now.
Right. Breaking news, everybody.
The real concern is that if too many, again, it's strategy, because the Emmys are not about quality; it's about strategy. So are the Oscars, so are every award show ever. The real concern is that if too many names from one show are submitted for consideration or nominated, they will cancel each other out. So their strategic thinking, they cancel the ones that they think have the best chance. But of course, now that they're in, HBO is going to do a full marketing push for all of them.
Yeah. Okay, so I mean, that makes sense. I mean, what he's saying makes sense. If, like what you said, if there's 4 out of the 6 actresses, I could see some of the voters being like, "Well, you know what I mean."
It will be pretty funny if Laura Linney ends up winning for Ozark over them.
I think that Jason Bateman has a chance to beat Kit Harington.
Oh, totally. Sorry, Julia Garner for Ozark, whatever.
I mean, yeah, I don't think Kit Harington's gonna win.
No, I don't either. Nice that he's nominated.
It's like Dan said, it's recognition for this, you know, series that changed the landscape of TV and did it in this huge sweeping way, you know, and That's why I think they picked up some of these additional noms in some places. You know, that's why I think Kit Harington got nominated, is because of his overall body of work. It's kind of like, you know, John Wayne winning an Oscar for True Grit. And it's like, but the problem is John Wayne was able to win because his category was fairly weak that year. And this year, I mean, for crying out loud, between Bob Odenkirk and Billy Porter,
yeah,
those are going to be hard to beat. I mean, Jason Bateman's a bit of a dark horse, and then the biggest thing is, with This Is Us being a network show, the only network show, you have to wonder, like, are they going to lean into those network shows? The networks still have a lot of pull in those places.
And but, I've got thoughts about This Is Us too. Like, I don't, they're good. It's a good show. This Is Us is a good show, but it's emotional terrorism, and they lean into that fucking whole, oh, my dad's dead, I'm gonna cry now thing, and that's why.
It's sadness porn, is what it is.
It's sadness porn, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm excited to see what they pick up. There are other individual nominations of people that I hope to see win, you know, in certain categories and everything, but or things that I hope don't win. But yeah, I think I really want to see Mahershala Ali win for True Detective personally, because I thought that
it's pretty good.
He really carried that season. I was bummed out that Stephen Dorff didn't get nominated as supporting, considering some of the great scenes he had in that series. But yeah, other than that, I don't really have any complaints overall.
Didn't they submit Last of the Starks for Best Writing, though?
Yes.
It is nominated for Best Directing.
Best, oh, okay.
Then Yeah, that all three directors were nominated for Best Director. Again, half of the Best Directing categories are Game of Thrones episodes. And, you know, again, it's not the ones that actually deserved it, but it's okay because that's not really what matters. Like, it's
I still don't understand why you can't, why A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms wasn't even put up for nomination. I can't understand the thought process behind that.
It breaks
my brain, honestly.
I mean, I don't think it should. I think it's more that it was probably longer. A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms didn't have a dragon death, which is hard to correct.
To Dan's point, I've heard just from more casual fans that they didn't necessarily like Last of the Starks because they felt it was kind of slow and boring.
You mean Knight of the Seven Kingdoms?
Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, I'm sorry. I think maybe, you know, Last of the Starks had the dragon death and Missandei's death and all that. So
Coffee cup.
So maybe that's more flashy and that's what they want to put on there. To that argument,
that
I would say, why wouldn't you put like the bells or the season finale or the long night? I mean, even, you know what I mean? Like, those are even more like buzzworthy, I guess, or popular, or whatever you want to call it, episode. So I was really kind of perplexed by
the episodes they
put forth.
The directing ones are The Long Night's up, The Last of the Starks is up, and the series finale is up.
Okay.
Again, those are like some of the more contentious episodes that are there, but it's not really about the episodes. It's about honoring the whole thing and getting something in there.
I like that Carice Van Houten was a guest.
That's pretty cool.
I think she'll win that one, actually.
I think Clark might pull off Best Actress, and I wouldn't be mad about it. That'd be fun. Although she might lose too. That's my comment. She may or may not win.
I could see her winning. She definitely, like we said previously, she actually did act her ass off in the season, and obviously she was a focus of it compared to people like Harrington or Heedy. That'd be fun to see Clark win though, because I think she'd be like a big bumbling emotional like honest.
I'm sorry, I'm gone.
Like, I feel like she'd be like, you know, doing the hand waving thing at her face and trying to figure out what
her
was going on.
Her eyebrows would crawl off her face.
They would cut to Sophie Turner clapping and just sobbing at one of the tables. It'd be great.
Yeah, I hope they do win. I know season 8 wasn't very good, but if it is kind of a recognition of their work on the entire series, there's definitely some very deserving actors and actresses on the show. So I kind of hope they do bring home a couple surprise wins here or there.
Well, I mean, it's the same with the Lord of the Rings movies. You know, the third one cleaned house. And I honestly think the third one might be the weakest of the three. But
hard agree.
But still, it was good. Don't get me wrong. But it was just kind of overbloated and long. But it had a lot to tie up. And it was like, at the time, a trilogy of that scale, of that magnitude, and that was that consistently good was like unheard of, especially in the fantasy genre. And so, like, they just bombarded that third movie with nominations and wins and everything else. And it was kind of in recognition for Peter Jackson's and the cast and crew's like overall accomplishment, you know, and I feel like that's comparable to Game of Thrones getting these 30 plus noms.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess my last comment about the Emmys before we wrap this up, I would have liked to have seen The Last Watch get some more noms than it did. It got like one nom for like music, I believe. You know, that documentary helped tie up it. Like, to me, it helped add to season 8. It helped tie up a bunch of things, and it kind of shed the light on, we've all enjoyed it. We've all talked about it before. It shed the light on things you don't normally see. That's not something a big show normally does.
I think that they needed to nominate the episode of After the Watch where the one guy was like, Danny kind of forgot about the Iron Fleet for being like...
Yeah. Or the missing making of the episode that is still somewhere bouncing around for the season
finale.
Mystery
missing making of.
That is around, and they just were like, nope, we're not going to air that.
You know what?
They must have said some really bad stuff on that making the episode, and I would pay a lot of money to see that. So
I hope they charge you and get it.
Oh, yeah. I would pay. I'm not kidding. I would pay money to see that final making the episode because
it's
I want
probably
to know.
David and Dan just sitting back, getting drunk, talking shit about George Martin. Like, yeah, this guy wanted us to do this. What? What an idiot.
Seven more seasons. Are you kidding me? Yeah. So, yeah. So I hope they end up getting a couple of surprise wins here or there. I know we didn't like season 8, you know, kind of overall, but I don't think any of us faulted the actors' effort, especially for the series as a whole. So I'd love to see someone like Alfie Allen win, or Emilia Clarke or someone like that, because I think that would be a deserving win for some of their previous work, and I'd love to see them up there.
I mean, when you say we, I kind of like season 8 to an extent. I didn't like Last of the Star because I didn't like that episode at all. But, you know, and I didn't like things like Danny's abrupt heel turn. But everything else, kind of liked. So, I don't know. It was up there. I mean, whatever. It wasn't the strongest season.
Right. And I guess that's what I'm saying. Even if we didn't necessarily all like it or dislike it, we can all agree it wasn't the best season.
I'm giving
season.
You shit right now, man.
No, but I'm saying, yeah, it wasn't the best season. But that doesn't mean I don't hope someone like Alfie Allen doesn't bring home the win, because his acting throughout the series definitely deserves recognition.
All right, so that's it for us tonight. We've talked about Dan's recap of Con of Thrones. We've talked about San Diego Comic-Con. We talked about Game of Thrones and the Emmys. Blood Moon, it's all going on right now at winteriscoming.net. Check us out over there for more stories, more in-depth discussion, and for the latest breaking news, even though it might be 3 or 4 hours late on Blood Moon. Dan's picking it up now as we speak, I'm sure. So thanks for listening. For myself, for Corey Smith, Corey Phone, and Dan, we'll probably be back in a couple of weeks. We'll probably be talking things like theories that we really thought were going to happen but didn't happen. Those kind of fun topics. So hit us up in the comments. Let us know what you'd like us to talk about. And thanks for listening. The Lord will give us.